Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Greetings and welcome to ID the Future. I'm Casey Luskin, broadcasting with Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture in Seattle, Washington. Today on the show, we have thus a very special guest, Felipe Aizpun, who is a member of the board of directors of OIACDI, the Organización Internacional para el Avance Científico del Diseño Inteligente, which is an organization devoted to promoting intelligent design in the Spanish-speaking world. Mr. Aizpun is also the author of Evolucionismo y Conocimiento Racional, and we actually had him on the show earlier this year talking about his book, and we're very happy to have him on the show again today talking about the new book that he's co-authored with Mario Lopez and Christian Aguirre, and the book is titled Darwin Frente Diseño Inteligente, and when translated, the book is probably titled in English Darwin versus Intelligent Design. So Felipe, thank you so much for being on the show with us today.
Thank you very much to you, Casey, for this opportunity. Thank you.
Well, we're very thankful for the work that you are doing to promote intelligent design in the Spanish-speaking world. And we're talking to you from Spain today, is that correct?
Yeah, I'm talking from Spain. Okay, that's right.
Great. So I'd like to talk about your new book, Darwin al Frente, Diseño Inteligente. And why did you write this book? Why did you and Mario Lopez and Christian Aguirre, why did you guys decide to write this book?
Okay, you know, this book offers a collection of the latest efforts undertaken by the members of the organization to elaborate on the theoretical frame of thought relating to intelligent design and to promote that. So that includes different articles by Mario Lopez, by Christian Aguirre and myself. And many of them, these are articles that have been drawn from our blog. We have a blog associated to the main page of our organization, and where for more than 1 year we offer to the Spanish audience an updated view of this crucial debate on the question of origins that is taking place nowadays in the scientific and philosophical international community. So we can say that the content of the book seeks to analyze more in depth some of the issues that are raised every day on this topic, showing new angles of the question debated. Okay.
I highly want to recommend the website of your organization. The website is oiacdi.org. It's basically your one-stop shop for learning about intelligent design in Spanish. So let's move to your chapter in your new book, which is titled Evolucionismo. It describes the philosophical ways that Darwin's theory has been interpreted. What are these interpretations, and what do they tell us?
Well, my point in this article is that Darwinism is mainly a philosophical issue. You know, there was a very famous article published by Francisco Ayala in 2007 under the title Design Without Designer.
I remember that.
Okay. So the core of the theory is that the design of living organisms is the consequence of random, non-intentional natural processes. That does not exactly mean that the design is apparent or is a delusion, because design is a fact. I mean, it's a pattern shown by living organism. Design is an organized arrangement of parts to produce a function or a meaning, and that is something that can be scientifically detected, that can be observed, can be identified. So now the problem is about causation. So Darwinism proposed that no formal causes or no teleological approaches are needed to account for the emergence of new biological forms. And in my opinion, that is mainly a philosophical issue. I think Darwinism is perfectly unreasonable because complex functional structures cannot arise out of nothing or out of just blind, non-guided physical forces, but we certainly need philosophical approaches to discuss this issue, apart, of course, from the necessary scientific grounds where every theory has to be sustained. Okay.
Now, you discuss whether evolution meets Karl Popper's criterion of falsification. What do you say about this?
Good. I think the Popper's criterion of falsification has been overstated, overvalued, and we do not sometimes understand the difference between experimental sciences and historical sciences. experimental sciences can be falsified in the sense that you can test a theory against a critical empirical experiment. So this way you can check the consistency of a theory that has to do with regularities in the physical world. We can think, for instance, in the recent experiment of the neutrinos that are supposed to travel faster than light, okay? So experimental science corresponds to a method of reasoning that we call induction, where you look for general laws that apply to individual facts. So you look at facts in nature and you try to infer the existence of a general law that can explain all those facts. But when you're talking about historical science, the method of reasoning is different. It's what we call abduction, that is the search of causes from effects. We know the effects and we look for the causes. The search of what we used to call in intelligent design literature the inference to the best explanation. So theories on historical sciences normally cannot be checked against an experiment because it has to do with unique events that took place many, many years ago and that are now repeatable. So in this sense, evolution cannot be falsified. You remember Popper said that in a certain moment that gave him a lot of problems, because he wanted to use that analysis to say that maybe evolution was not really scientific. So in my opinion, evolution, because it is a historical science, cannot be falsified in the same way as a experimental science. But this does not mean that evolutionism is not a scientific theory. Of course it is a scientific theory because it deals with natural facts and it tries to explain them by natural explanations. Whether it is true or not is another question, okay?
You also have a chapter in the book on biological information, and in that chapter you discuss the work of David Abel, who I think we've talked about a little bit before here on ID the Future. What is your argument in that chapter?
I love the work of Professor David Abel. He's the director of the Life Origin Science Foundation, okay? And he has developed a wonderful job on the cybernetics of life. Cybernetics has to do with control in functional structures and systems. And a living organism is an astonishing example of a functional structure that operates under a specific control and regulatory operational framework. David Abel has elaborated a theoretical frame to understand how this control operating system can be explained in terms of causation. He also has worked on explaining what are the limits of the capacity for self-organization of natural things, if there is any capacity at all for self-organization. And he has also worked in things like explaining the difference between order and organization. We can find order in nature as a consequence of physical forces acting on nature, but never organization that emerge spontaneously. I mean, he has explained that we should include concepts like choice contingency as a category of causation together with chance and necessity. If we want to explain natural facts, we need to do that, okay? As a consequence of this discourse, Abel has identified what he calls prescriptive information. And prescriptive information that can be found in living organism, in the genome of living organism, is functional and meaningful information. And this prescriptive also in the sense that it forces something to happen. So prescriptive information is, we can see it as the cause that makes living beings be what they are. The consequence is clear. So because inanimate matter and uniform and intentional laws cannot account for the emergence of prescriptive genetic information and the biological novelties.
Why do you feel that biological information provides evidence for design in nature?
Yeah, of course it does. This is an issue that has been addressed in a magnificent way by Dr. Stephen Mayer in his great book, Signature in the Cell. So basically, we have to acknowledge that information makes part of nature. So it's an observable part of reality together with matter, energy, physical laws. We also have information in nature. So the difference is that information is not an abstract concept, it's not a force, is not a cause. Information is a specific data in a specific organism that prescribe a huge amount of different forms in the real world. So, but these biological new forms have to take into account that they have emerged in time, at a certain moment in time. So they need a causal explanation. What is the cause for that to emerge? Dr. Meyer has made a fantastic case from a strictly empirical argument, in the sense that from experience we know that information has always emerged out of an intelligent agency. I also would like to stress a point I like very much, in the sense that I think that is an a priori philosophical argument for that as well, or an argument that doesn't come from experience, but is just rational. And the argument is that the existence of information capable to prescribe a certain biological form has to necessarily be preceded by the existence of the idea of the thing prescribed. That is, the idea of the design, so to speak, is first, and the prescriptive information, that is, the we can say it's the formal arrangement of instructions for the building of the thing, is next. So information requires an idea of the thing coming from a mind, because an idea is coming from a rational mind, and the idea of the whole that has to be formed, and that has to be so because information is always intentional, it's purposeful. Information is about something, so the idea has to come first.
What can you tell me about the other contributors to the book, Mario Lopez and Christian Aguirre?
Mario's contribution in this book covers different areas of this debate, like, for instance, the distinction between minor evolutionary changes and the grand scale changes that the fossil record reveals, what he calls the curious case of biological Big Bangs. He goes on to explain why design cannot be reasonably attributed to a Darwinian mechanism, and he defends the inference to intelligent agency, and gives some remarkable example of biological design in insect mimicry that are best explained as a result of intelligence as opposed to co-evolution, convergent evolution, or natural selection, things like that. There is also a fantastic contribution by Christian. Christian is an informatics engineer and has developed a very consistent discourse to explain from the point of view of the specific intrinsic characteristics of a functional structure, the necessity to account for its architecture as a product of an intelligently designed plan. So he's the author of a very interesting book published in our organization that is called Elementos de Estructuras Funcionales, Elements of Functional Structures. And some of the ideas originally presented in his book have been further developed in several articles that have been published in our blog and that now are also included in this.
Well, this is very exciting, and again, the book is titled Darwin al Frente, Diseño Inteligente, or when translated, probably best called Darwin versus Intelligent Design. It's by Mario Lopez, Felipe Aizpun, and Cristian Aguirre. It's from the Organización Internacional para el Avance Científico del Diseño Inteligente, which is devoted to promoting intelligent design in the Spanish-speaking world. And Felipe, I want to thank you for your work and what you have done to help promote intelligent design. And I just want to wish you the best and your organization the best as you guys continue in this endeavor.
Okay, thank you very much, Casey, to you. Thank you for your time and for this opportunity to talk about our work.
Well, great. Well, go check it out. The website again is oiacdi.org for the Organización Internacional para el Avance Científico del Diseño Inteligente. I'm Casey Luskin with ID the Future. Thanks for listening.
Hi, this is Casey Luskin with ID the Future. As the year of 2011 comes to an end, I want to thank you for listening to Discovery Institute's ID the Future podcast. It's been gratifying this past year to hear comments from students who tell us that ID the Future helps them get through their pro-Darwin biased courses and keeps them informed of the ID world. I hope that ID the Future has benefited you this past year as well. It takes money to create ID the Future, as well as all of the other work we do here at Discovery Institute. For example, much of the work that I do defending academic freedom for pro-ID scientists doesn't happen in a vacuum. We need the support of ID the Future listeners to keep these important projects going. If you'd like to make a contribution, go to www.idthefuture.com and click the donate button. Just go to idthefuture.com and click the orange donate button on the left-hand side. Thanks again for listening and for supporting us this past year.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.